Same idea. Sorry about that. Heathrow?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know. In that case, the best way. Do you have a lot of luggage? In that case, the best way would be to go by subway, but if you have a lot of luggage, I'm sorry, I'm afraid I've got a
stool.
Well, the best way is to go by subway, but if you have a lot of luggage, well, then taxi, I suppose. Yes, that's right. Then you've got a... No. If you do that, you've got a load of well, no, I was going to say, if you... If you're not going to take a taxi all the way... Well, if you take a taxi all the way, it's going to cost you about £7. They're just one man bus driver. He doesn't. You don't get any more help. Yes, they are airport buses, but they're two-story buses. They don't have anybody to help with the luggage. It's very bad. You have to carry the luggage yourself. So you might as well take a taxi all the way. It's as I say, it's about £7, but then.
It's narrow.
It's a mostly
concentrated
of a second.
against us, we'd like to get 3 centimetres of light from us. That's a fish going up to the
So a fluctuation of that weakness superimposed on the background, that intensity is enough to get to our focus then.
Yeah, there's a copper sharp.
Why did Bohr react in this way and on the effect being demonstrated?
At that time, what we did was measuring the bits of the nuclear level, if you want to call it like that, by varying the velocities of neutron to neutron. There you find that the variations of temperature they are from is sufficient to make reactions more intense or less intense.
Yes, indeed.
And that is that was since average height of the events that we understand that you are at an energy level of about 6 million.
We say 6 million, yeah.
6 million. That is 6 million. So that would be a 10 million. You would have been with the 10 to the 9. Later, it turned out that the levels were even sharper. That was the most part. So far, that was related.
Yes, I mean, the thing is, I've only come across the Bosbar effect, the references to the Bosbar effect, as having represented an anomaly for the then existing formalism of quantum mechanics. And this I don't quite understand, although it's clearly an experiment. Yes, there are.
You will get it when I was a student.
Eddie is
molecules because exciting molecules and so on. And so I worked on selenium sharper defined. And now it is so classic when you can say something, the electron is also but you might have a molecule, there's a component which classic, but would radiate That's a very small fraction.
Yeah.
It takes energy away at a very much lower rate.
Yeah.
Now, the same thing you can expect in nuclear.
Yeah.
That you get nuclear bits out there, which have very much greater coherence rates.
Yeah.
So then you get from 10 to the 9 to the 10 to the 13 or something like that. And that is just a certain levels have that very sharp value. So it is nothing really. Everything is all logic, not surprising when you know the whole picture of these little bits. Now I have one thing.
I was going to ask you again about your
systems, but I have found one thing which is very different, right? Then you have particles which have different mass, and they are double energy. Then the smaller ones have greater change of their possible energy with the time of When you have, let's say you have an electron.
Yes.
In an electric field.
Yes, yes.
And a cloth.
Yes.
You have it in the inhomogeneous field.
Yes.
It will oscillate, but it will be driven.
Yes.
From the region of greater field strength to the region of smaller field.
Yes.
No matter if the inhomogeneity is perpendicular to the line of force or is in line. You understand why?
Yes.
Why it does that? Because when it's in the line, let's say the inhomogeneity goes like this.
Yes.
Then the particle goes out, it gets kicked in by a bigger field, it gets kicked out by another field, so it has density to obey. If you have an inhomogeneity which runs like this, you have a light force like this, like the electron is here,
yes.
Then it will move this way, but it will be kicked out by centrifugal force. So it will also move out.
Yes.
But the amount which it moves out is only depending on the inhomogeneity, it doesn't matter if the inhomogeneity is indirect or perpendicular to the vector. Now, you can express this force which you get there. It's potential. You can say there is a potential, and I call it this quite. Once you introduce this, I was a Mason, I didn't find out the German, so I thought he must have had that. So then, coming from this, so I said, well, our matter is asymmetric. We have the heavy particles, the positive here. So we must get a separation of the positive and negative. Then I had the idea, maybe sand is not conservative, or is there a negative gravitational effect. So, the next thing, those are unpublished studies of environmental
which are extremely interesting, because it's not entirely...
No,
it sounds, as I say, I know nothing about the experimental background, but you know that the history of the attempts to apply gravitational electromagnetic forces, first of all, in context of differential geometry, tell me what you did. I took a plasma, and I assumed there's no gravitation, because I want to explain gravitation, and then it
has tended to contract,
yeah.
Because your positive and negative charge want to get closer together. In that process of contraction, you have some throwing out of electrons. It is just like a lever. When you have those are disquieted, you have to, as soon as it starts condensating, you have to lose electrons. And how many electrons do I have? How you lose them is absolutely well defined. Then from this, you could take the conclusion that any condensed matter in the universe has mirror images of its concentration in the outer space, which would be electron clouds, which have variable density in outer space, which are mirror image of what is in the condenser. Now, from this, I mean, the computation, I got the gravitational constant within 1 or 2% right value. The right magnitude, which is 10 to 50 orders of magnitude, that's the right value. So I thought maybe there is something to it. Now, you see, it is so that electric fields cannot expand gravitation. So you would have to invent something. So you might think that there might be something that those fields don't react if they go below a certain value. You have to convince, so things I did many years ago, and I have to put in one envelope, and when I ever have time, I take it out and want to check it if there's some truth to it. But you see,
I'm afraid, I'm sorry, I don't quite see where the electron cloud's coming, where the...
Well, the disquiet of the proton is greater than the disquiet of the electron.
Therefore,
the force for the electron to go away is greater than it was a proton. And on that level, you have the two motions. One is a thermal and the other one is a rotation.
Yes.
It's a system. They are on the same level and they intend to throw electrons up. In other words, it would be like that. I actually exist.
Yes, you're...
This would lose the trade of electrons. And now, when you have this, the things, if that were true,
yes.
It would explain the curvature of light which passes through the space. Because if I have an inhomogeneous electron cloud, the light will not move on straight lines. And then these curved lines might be identical or similar to those curved lines which you have.
So in fact you have a...
So
yes.
It is something...
You have a...
It is something, if it is true... It
you have an extraordinarily sort of mechanically flavoured explanation for what is normally in the context of GR thought of as a property of the space-time with which one starts off.
It would be not that...
Something which is built in at the most fundamental level of the geometry.
But you would have something tangible to say, yes, that is it, that's all.
Does that train at all? I have no background at all, first year mathematician, then occasional professor. Most of the background is mathematical logic and set theory and calculus. But is there any type of tour between that and the? I understand that people like Feynman, the approach to the particle thing, the particle thing has a very different perception of what is involved in a different kind of way of quantizing gravitational things than the sort of general relativist. The general relativist tends to approach it at the level of the differential structure of the underlying manifold. So you tend to find ways of generalizing that, which allow for the unification of the electromagnetic field.
Well, you don't have time.
You know about the ultraviolet divergences in quantum field thing. There are strong infinities which appear in solutions of the equations of quantum electrodynamics. One of the ways of dealing with it, the way which they're normally dealt with is by a particular mathematical trick. For renormalization theory, which involves a fudged up and very tricky way of dealing with divergences in second order in the solutions to the equations. But it doesn't appear, it doesn't seem to be any way of relating the way that one has to deal with the mathematics in order to avoid sort of infinite self-energies and connection within the physics. Anything that any intuition we have about what's actually going on physically. There are alternative ways of trying to treat it, like S matrix theory, introducing some higher order direction of S matrix theory and perturbation theory, which again is essentially a mathematical method of treating the mathematical solution rather than actually telling one what is really happening. I understand, and I know it's no more than a rumour that Feynman and co-workers that there have been calculations done, for instance, in if one thinks of a particle, if one thinks of the gravitational field simply as a field which emits quanta with velocity to and solutions which are usually referred to as gravitons, analogy with other. There is a technique for summing the Feynman diagrams for gravitons, which allows one to quench the sort of infinite self-energy, the infinities involved, to suppress the infinities, which are in fact the infinities which appear classically in the form of the singularity theorems in GR. I don't know if you know anything about that. There's some very interesting stuff going on.
One thing which I didn't know for a long time was this. understand logic, which we apply, which is a mathematics, is derived from nature. For centuries, it is so sad. You, with logic, can predict things which are in nature that look back to us.
And you're going to cause me to have a stroke in a moment.
What?
You're going to cause me to have a stroke in a moment.
Why?
Well, no, I think the mathematical use of the last 100 years have been extremely uncomfortable with the idea that logic is derived from nature in any sense that allows the introduction of sort of that there is any way of trying to.
There's a danger. This is mathematics in complexity.
Yeah, but there's another danger too, an equal danger, which is that one can allow one's intuition, that one can allow the route that seems most natural or least resistant to the demands of intuition in terms of deciding the way in which one ought to unify a set of two sets of apparently disparate and descriptive concepts. A classic instance would be precisely a classic instance would be the situation in which the early quantum theorists found themselves in the 1920s, in the early 20s, before Dirac produced the special relativistic wave equation, the electron, at a time when there appeared to be waves and particles. And no way apparently of unifying. There's the matrix formulas, there's the Heisenberg matrix formulas, and there's the Schrödinger wave equation. And there appears to be no way of attempting. Yes, but I mean, there seems to be no way of effective. And there were heroic attempts to unify those sort of divergent conceptual frameworks in order to indicate where the solution would lie mathematically. And in fact, that is not how the solution was found mathematically. The solution was found. The solution was found at purely mathematical level. I mean, the idea that matter is in fact a quantized field, a concept can only be understood mathematically, and not in terms of finding the answer to the question which is more fundamental, the wave picture or the particle picture. The answer is neither of them is in fact more fundamental than the other. There is no, I mean, although there have obviously been people like Sartre and others who attempted to find sort of non-linear spinor field theories, in which Heisenberg himself, in fact, in his last years, who did a great deal of work on non-linear spinor field theories, with which would allow the derivations of quantum mechanics and some linear theories as a sort of limiting case. Now, I don't know very much about that work. Conceptually, it's an immensely appealing idea because it goes right back to the most fundamental sources of our intuition, the idea that there should be one underlying substantial, one underlying entity whose property. Yeah, well, there's very interesting papers by Heisenberg in his last years, some semi-philosophical papers, about elementary particle theory, which he argues that the Chu and other people, that in fact, Heisenberg in his last years was arguing in his semi-philosophical papers, for instance, a very interesting paper in the Dirac Fishery, arguing very strongly against this. No, we have to give up the idea of the particles, even the rather shadowy sort of particles which are no longer thought of in terms of classical particles, sort of localized, sort of concrete entities, relatively impenetrable, stable entities. Not even the sort of shadowy quantum relatives of those. They have to go. The underlying symmetry is more fundamental than the particles. The trouble is that there are interparticle conversion processes in elementary particle physics, which one cannot make sense of in terms of the axioms of set theory, for instance, the Mello-Frankel set theory. There's an axiom which all mathematicians use, which is the axiom of Mello-Frankel set theory. It's there also in categorical. Any foundational system of mathematics, the axiom of regularity, it says basically that there are no infinitely descending chains, that every set, hierarchically well-formed set, has an ancestral, well-defined ancestral relationship. I mean, simplifying it now. The point is that if the sort of interparticle conversion processes that one has been led to understand occur in models of existing quantum field theory, taken as realistic, then putting it in an extremely crude way, that axiom is just not true of the world. That is to say that there are clearly particles which are which cannot be regarded as, where other particles cannot be regarded in any unambiguous sense as being constituents of those particles. Because, I mean, given, given the rights of injection of energies, one is as likely to get, I don't know enough about elementary particle theory to know just what the terms are, and I also don't know quite how the particle works. But pre-Murray-Gell-Mann, there was a rapidly multiplying family of apparently elementary particles, none of which was elementary in the sense that a classical physicist would have understood the idea of a particle being elementary, because certainly in the solutions to the S matrix, one could equally well interpret a particular Feynman diagram in terms of the sort of decomposition of into five or six other particles, which any one of which in the decay products of, sorry, the point is that I'm not sure if I'm using the correct technical term, but there are particles which can occur as the decay products of interactions involving particles which themselves occur as the decay products of interactions involving those particles. I think I got that right. In other words, there is some interparticle conversion process occurring where one has a notion of what is an equivalent, what is a potential constituent of a fundamental particle. There are things which can be potentially constituents, or apparently constituents, in the sense that they are the residues of fundamental particles, which are themselves explained in terms that can equally well be viewed as the things which whose decay products include those particles. I'm sorry, I'm doing this very badly. The point is that there is no unambiguous notion of an elementary constituent. But the point is that in the mathematical model, well, in Zermelo-Fraenkel set theory, there are, in fact, axioms which are used all the time by mathematicians which rely on the fact that there are no infinitely descending chains. There are no non-well-founded sets which are not, in a well-defined sense, some members of other sets, which have, as it were, a smallest element. Yet, at the same time, there is, in a sense, no smallest element. As I say, I don't know enough about quantum, but there is an obvious sense in which, in terms of elementary particle theory, there is no unambiguously designated smallest element involved in the process. I mean, there does seem to be a conceptual tension there. I'm sorry, I'm expressing this very badly because I don't know the physics involved. But there are clearly interparticle conversion processes which lend themselves to description in terms of a sort of plenum ontology. An ontology which does not start off from the idea of a plurality of individuals which are structureless, devoid of structure with respect to the sources of the theory, which does not start off, which, as it were, does not take it that we have to make sense of that. We know what an individual is. The set theorists don't think they do know what an individual is. Anything which satisfies the axis of ZF is an individual. Literally anything, whether it's a set, or whether it occurs as a member of a set, or as an individual. The point is that there is definitely, if one thinks of Zermelo-Fraenkel set theory, this is the great danger, if one thinks of it as, in some sense, connected with descriptive concepts that we employ at the most fundamental level of physical theorizing, then there is definitely a conceptual tension between what appears to be a prior conceptual requirement in order to get, in order to be able to define certain mathematical operations. One requires the notion of collection and an operation on a collection of well-defined individuals, a collection taken as exception, which is simply determined by what its members are. Of which one can say nothing more, one can say nothing about its internal morphology, other than its members are A, B, C, D. But that is, from one methodological point of view, the standpoint which one can take towards the foundations of set theory, it's an absolutely fundamental notion underlying the whole of mathematics. At the same time, that very notion seems to be challenged. we seem to lose our grip on innovation right now. If the existing, if what I understand to be a picture of interparliamentary conversion processes that are treated in EBT is the correct one. But as I say, I don't know enough about things like plots. And also, I understand that there are techniques for unification of, gauge theory, the use of non-linear gauge theory, where trying to unify capital dynamics theory, which you prove mathematically very fruitful. They involve some algebraic machinery, algebraic topology, use of some sheet theory, things which I do not know enough about. But there are certain non-linear gauge theory, which certainly several mathematicians put forward as providing the most promising route to the unification of the theories, the existing theories of fundamental process, which, but unfortunately I don't know how the mathematics involved there in the case of non-linear. I don't even know what a non-linear gauge theory is. I don't understand what a gauge theory is, what a sort of breaking of a gauge symmetry is. I don't quite understand where the non-linearity comes in, but there is some new mathematics there that's come along really quite recently. But what you were saying earlier, I find extremely interesting, because what you call the fifth being extremely appealing the mechanical model for the explanation of curvature. Absolutely fascinating. I mean, I'd really like to know more. But I would be very grateful if you haven't published it.
No.
I would be most grateful, and I'm certainly treated in the document if you sent me an offering. It would be very great to see. Well,
smelling is hearing upon something. Did you know that?
Hearing? Well, of course, you were talking earlier on about the
air. No, I after the war, I was in Germany, I was back to the lab and I was in the next week over. No, I was not going to do my work, but I could do something. So, I don't have to let it change. as I looked at the home and I was
in about 12,
because there's metal, this is similar to campers.
Yes.
Then I looked into one of the camper and that has this ring, this cross, which is similar to the other one. Then I thought maybe since the bonding forces between carbons are similar, it might be the vibrational frequencies. So you have a similar structure, you would think microscopically knock it would have a similar sound. So the result is that if this is true, you would need temperature difference between the sensing organ and the air, which carries the thing. And so that was the first experiment which I then did, and the experiment and smell disappears completely when you have different temperature. And that's the reason why we smell when we want to smell. When you want to smell something, you get the air in quick enough that it has no chance to warm up. Then you get to the sensing organ, not understanding what the sensing organ is. Now, if you take a dog has a cold nose, for that same reason.
And also, presumably, reasons why when one has an extremely heavy cold, when one's been blowing your nose for a long time, the temperature in the membrane is what loses one sense. Okay, there's inflammation as well. Let's talk about the connection, because clearly the temperature in the membrane is much higher than we
If somebody has a bad odor out of his mouth, he doesn't smell it, he does not. It's not because he is fatigued, he's not. If you exhale it in some cold container and inhale it, you can smell it.
Yes.
It's the same way. But you cannot smell it because it has poor temperature. But then I made experiments to have smelling substances and let them go through holes. As soon as you have increased quality temperature, so this is an actually extended hearing in the molecule, in the frequency range of organic molecules, which is lower in frequency than like industrial matters, as they say, but then of course I didn't have enough people to do my research program on it, and I thought a lot about what could be done, making artificial smelling and things like that, a lot of approaches. Now, I would, they even offered me
You have
available now. I mean, it will be very complex.
You have about 70 very good ideas every day. Certainly about 65 more per minute. Tell me again about the diaphragm. Explaining the principle of your directional microscope.
I told you two effects which are existing in order to speak us. Which they don't know and they don't consider. The one was the singing saw effect, that the rigidity of the thin sheet gets considerable. And you don't have to modulate that rigidity very much, because we have an extreme great sense for pitch. We have the first thing what I showed you was of the sensitivity of the human ear for loudness variation as function of frequency. They're curves which are more like this. And then under this I put the sensitivity for pitch variation. And there you find it's about a factor 100 difference.
Yes, I was going to say it's about a factor of 100.
It's 100 difference.
It's about two orders of magnitude.
But as they go around and say, I have a speaker which is flat, this way. Such a nonsense. You go in a concert and it is all so loud and you have to absorb the property of all the places of the people and your tops are down, maybe 10 dB, and you enjoy the concert, it's fine. And then you go when it's different and you enjoy it too. We adapt to this and we don't listen to that. But the audience is so stupid, they measure that and think that is, but the ear is sensitive. You see, a steady tone generated by signal generator has no musical value.
No.
We have to put a life in it. It is a FM modulation which is necessary. You have a sound, let's say, with the eyes. Nerves need that thing. The eyes, people have done the experiment, they put the mirror arrangement on, so that when you turn your eye, the image goes round with it. Then you're blind within a few minutes. That means you still have a light impression, but you cannot discriminate anything. A part of the seeing is that flicking, which you do all the time. You look at my eyes, they're all the time moving. You look here and here.
Yes,
when this is blocked, you're out. You cannot hear anymore. And that goes on the nerves, and in the ear, it's the same thing. I mean, it's you need the variation, and then you get that sense. And on all, then, of course, what is really important in high fidelity audio is the slope of that curve, and not the value of the curve, the slope. And you can stay between two things, have very slopes. And let's say, because of the vibrators, or the details of the vibrators are giving you that sense of the beauty of the music. Now, if you have a slope here, then a vibrator comes out false. And then, of course, since we are so sensitive, for each variation, all these effects, which I told you, sing is all effect, even though they are relatively small effects, we get them. And we don't understand it, we say, it doesn't sound like the actual music. And also with the damping effect, which I told you, it's very complex. You rub something and it comes all the time and it returns, comes to a rest and then starts again. And also things, they cause pitch variation. And I eliminated them and I was amazed what I get. Now, the third effect, which I had, I started telling you,
yes,
but
that was when
through.
I got you up onto the most bar effect. You mentioned Raman effect just before that.
The Raman effect is the same as the singing saw effect. It only gives it, singing saw is rough speaking. When you take a metal sheet and you bend it, it goes bang.
Yes.
The more you bend it, the higher the pitch. And if you shake a big sheet, you get thundery noise. And that sheet, you put in, when I gave a talk, I just take a sheet and shake it. 2-3 cycles per second. I say, here's that, can you hear something? Oh, yes. What frequency do you think that is? 500,000 and all the noise in the aluminum foil. How does that sheet do it? Transforms this oscillating energy, this is high frequency. Only by there's some vibration energy trapped and you bend it and send it because of it fails.
Yes.
So, and this effect.
As you say, the parallel with the superposition of that tiny frequency on top of an extremely high one, and yet the human ear is sensitive enough to detect it. That's the analogy with the most powerful.
I eliminated it by having no resonances in the system. I make the resonant frequency of the system, which has to move the air, the lowest resonant frequency higher than the frequency which I want to reproduce. Then I need no damping. Now, to move it high, I use for communication, for getting the acoustic information, their longitudinal sound.
Yes.
That travels fast, there are rods going through. And then the diaphragms are distributed driven. When you have a bigger diaphragm and you divide it in spots, the lowest possible frequency goes higher. You can make it as high as you want if you just make the distribution more uniform. If you go to the extremes and it goes in atomic dimensions, then you have a constant and an absolute uniform distributed force, and then you cannot excite any gravitational vibration. So if you had a tuning fork and you had a gravitational field which would vary in the rhythm of the resonant frequency of that tuning fork, the tuning fork wouldn't sound because you need differential acceleration to get elastic forces, electrokinetic acoustic. It is different in electromagnetic, therefore electromagnetic needs no medium. And here you need a medium.
Yes.
Therefore electromagnetic, you always get waves because you cannot excite the infinity simultaneously. But here that's the difference. So I have those strips in aluminum strips, they when you touch them, drop on them, they have of course an acoustic current, but it cannot get excited because the current flow through is uniformly distributed, the mass is uniformly distributed, so you have exactly the condition which you have on the tuning fork. Therefore I have no resonances, and then I have only those little pockets on that corrugated thing, they represent by the 10% of the mass. And there you get a little bit of deviation from this because you have an extra mass and this mass has no extra drive. And that causes, in that speaker, a resonance at about 6,000 cycles. But this I just damp heavy enough. And then I read. But you can even discriminate that. Now, you see, you have probably read that they do now direct to disc recording. I was just visiting yesterday. I was visiting Kiev. They're very nice laboratory down in Maidstone. They do loudspeaker, but they're very I was very impressed by what they do. They do very, very careful mission, very, very excellent work. But they don't think fundamental. They have their plots. What they do, they have a square pulse of very short duration. And they current, they put that in the speaker. And then they have microphones there, and then they record as function of time and frequency all what happens. So you get mountain range. They have the frequency from here to here, and then you have from here to here the time. So you get, first it is square, it's pretty uniform, you Fourier analyze it over the frequency range, and then it develops hills and dales.
But you Fourier analyze.
Yeah, Fourier analyze. Yes. It's a technique which you...
Oh, I know, yes, I know about
you, you store the information, since you have to run that thing through with computers,
yes.
Lots of times it gets averaged, so you get a nice landscape of this thing. So
yes, I do remember that much about Fourier analysis.
They have this landscape. So I asked them, how do you explain that? Oh, then you get weird answers and so on. And I say, how can energy be transported from one frequency to another frequency? And then they showed us and they don't know. And I can say there are only two, as far as I can see, only two distinct effects. So one is a singing saw effect. The other one is the internal friction effect. And the internal friction effect would result in an increase in frequency. And I have curves from them which show exactly when you go down in the intensity to a certain point, all the hills and dales move like that. Then you see.
I'm sorry, you want to go and eat. Going to suggest that perhaps we should move back inside. Or do you want to go and eat? I don't want to hold you up. I feel very guilty. I imagine you want to get something to eat. It really has been very interesting talking to you. I don't suppose, I mean, are you, in fact, booked to eat in your hotel? You wouldn't allow me to, you're booked to eat in your hotel, are you? You wouldn't allow me to take you out for dinner. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
No, I take you out for dinner.
No, no,
we can
no.
Go together
but I,
somewhere.
Well, could we not? Could I not take you?
We don't have dinner at the hotel, but we are short on pounds.
Well, I'm not.
Oh, I have to change some.
Well, I changed the money for you. How much would you have Deutschmark?
I don't know what
it is. Well, I'd change that for you if you like. What's the rate? You know, you name the rate and I'll pay it. I'm so we won't have any problem.
How much do we need for the taxi and the telephone cost?
I have about £20 on me. I have about £20. You need about £7 for the taxi tomorrow if you take a taxi.
How many pounds do you
have? Pounds? No, you mean pounds. I don't know much left.
Well, if you have to change some more dollars, but that's about £20 on me, I can change it. I'll have to, because you can't go to the bank tomorrow. It's Sunday. Yeah, and also they give you a lousy rock and roll exchange at the airport. Well, look, how much do you need? Please tell me.
I don't have a dollar, see, I have to use the hotel.
That's all right,
that's
the hotel.
You have some here.
Oh, you've got $40, but the exchange rate.
Well, the exchange rate is...
I have a little...
You have a little... Yes, well, you know the dollar has gone down quite sharply.
Yeah, I think
it was 1.96, I think, this morning.
I think it was
1.97.
I just changed today, but this is a note, that was $30. You see, $30. And that must be the rate.
Well, that's $2 free. Well, I...
And 3.5, I don't know what that is.
Well, that's their commission. Obviously, I wouldn't charge a commission.
Okay.
Well, for $30, they gave you £14.
Yeah.
So they gave you slightly worse than 2-1. So I will give you 2-1. If you give me $20, I can give you £10. How about that?
No,
that's fine. No, you've only got 40. I haven't quite got 20. That's the point. I've only got £18 altogether.
Oh, that's just
so fine. If I give you, say, 20... you haven't got anything smaller than a 20?
No.
Oh. Well, have you got... You've only got two $20 bills. Oh,
but
I can change one of them. I change one
enough.
Of them. That would be enough, I think, £10. Now that's going to pay your... I mean, that's going to be more than enough to cover your taxes pay. Your taxes pay will only be about
$7
or
$6.57. But we have to go to dinner.
Oh,
we
have to go. Well, except... Well, would you not allow me? There's a very nice little Italian restaurant just down the road from here, actually. May I suggest, it's a very nice one, it's only just down the road. It's
a restaurant I could pay with
that's bad exchange too.
Well, now you've got the money, you've got the English money.
We have it.
Why not?
Yeah.
Well, that's, the, I mean,
it's
only about £1.50 in the Italian restaurant. It's a very good one, £1.52.
Okay.
It's a very nice little Italian restaurant. Oh, well, do you not like Italian food?
No, we had it last time.
Well, okay, let me take you in. It's a very good one. Oh, I think in that case, actually, it might be the same one.
Yeah. Oh, that's
Dora
fine.
Burnie.
That's fine.
Oh, we don't want to go there again. Well, the one just down the road from your hotel.
Isn't there one? Yes.
That's the one I was thinking of taking you to. It's just round the corner here. But I don't want to take you there if you've already been. You know, if you don't want to go again.
That doesn't matter.
All of London.
And it is quite a good restaurant. It is the one I think.
Yeah, it was good. I
there's a Greek restaurant right outside the Evan Evans office. Was that the one you think of?
Probably. Oh, I don't think
it's very expensive. About £8 a head. Greek restaurant 10. I'm not, of course, involved in that, although I'm very interested, but I have always been. I mean, I started in London before, although I certainly didn't lie in that direction, and I ended up as a mere philosopher of science. I still. I'm always extremely interested. I spend a lot of time in. I wish my knowledge of particle physics was better, because it obviously is considered far and away the most fascinating area at the moment.
Yeah,
but it's certainly the area which engages the occupation of the best people. Yes.
Something very new, some principle basic idea is missing. Something is missing.
That's certainly what Dirac thinks. It's his persistent theme, in fact, in all ways. And of course, it's Heisenberg, too, in those.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I could have said about Heisenberg, just before he died, was this business about symmetry as being more fundamental than.
Simplex illum veri, you know, the Latin word which says the simplicity is the sign of the truth.
Yes.
That really doesn't apply the way it looks now. And I still believe that.
I'm not so sure, actually. I think that may be appealing to a very profound aesthetic prejudice, which we all have. I've yet to discover a philosophically convincing argument as to why this is positive. Maybe that the truth is better. May very well be that.
Yeah,
but I mean, you're wrong to say that he would never believe. He would only believe that emotions would represent.
What we know
is the truth.
What we know
theory, it was a beautiful equation.
No, what we really know is the periodic system with all the elements. And all that is beautiful, isn't it? How everything goes together and so on.
Mendelia,
I could say it's beautiful.
Look how complicated nature is, though. Just the animals.
When you go and see, the complexity of organic molecules. That is the complexity of geometry. If you study geometry of space or crystallography, you know you can go
indeed. Well, I know a little bit about lattice theory. Not so much about. I don't know.
It is so complex. Most people are not aware how complex space is. You know. As soon as you start studying those things, the crystal structures and so on, and then of course how complex is life.
It's very interesting, though, how you see. I understand what you mean about the necessity of some beautiful fundamental concept to allow to legislate the development in particle physics. But there have been so many promising candidates on grounds of mathematical beauty and also. What I was saying earlier on, the way in which they appear to tie up with the sort of fundamental new intuition of the way in which those fundamental concepts might tie up. Might seem to promise a lot, in fact, founder, technically.
Yeah.
An excellent example is something like Bohm. Now, I don't know whether you ever had any contact with him.
No.
David Bohm, he's a professor of physics at Imperial College for years, he's an American professor. Bohm produced many, many papers, semi-philosophical papers, attempt to derive a very radical and daring, not the sort of papers that serious theoretical physics journals will publish.
Yeah.
Sort of papers that very often publish in philosophical journals. And he's a very good physicist as well, but in which he argued for a much more radical attempt at conceptual unification of the ideas, general relativity.
Starting from ideas of a radical, an idea of taking non-locality, the idea of non-locality, as a guiding heuristic principle for the structure of a radically new mathematics. It all sounds terribly impressive. When you actually look at the details, there is no conceptual involved. I mean, the point is that Berman's not an unfortunate, this is an excellent teacher. Frankly, not enough of a mathematician to see that what he proposes as radically new mathematics is in fact parasitic. It depends on its very definition.
Well, there is a possibility that we are on a dead end road. That's a physical system. You see, when you think about those things, you base your thinking on what you read. And almost every body does that. Therefore, you might be on rails, which leads you to dead end. That's a possibility. The new things might come from somebody with absolute outline not being
Yes, I mean the new things might very well, and it may very well be that non-linear gauge theories are in fact the things against the unifying theories of elementary particles with existing theories of the weak interaction and electromagnetism. If they are going to come from outside, I suspect they are going to come from theory. I mean, I suspect this is deeply ingrained cultural prejudice. Hang on, we'll cross here. People used undergraduates used to steal in the way that undergraduates at Cambridge used to steal policemen's helmets, a sort of initiation act. They used to steal those too. Not so much nowadays, but back in the 50s. Oh, that's the one you were thinking of. Well, there's another one down here. Which is very good. I'm afraid you haven't. I can't believe it.